where we continuing with our public hearings. I must indicate that there are two companies who have since requested that they will not be able to present today. It's Transnet. I'm told they have their AGM, and we have Sasol. I don't have reasons why have they not been able to come and present. I guess I needed to put that in into this meeting so that you know that we will have to juggle our schedule. But having said that, you are warm welcomed. Apologies, Valerie.
Yes, Chairperson, there were apologies from Ms. Kumalo and Ms. Noluchungu, who both said that they have organizational duties today that they have to attend to.
Oh, okay. Otherwise, everybody's here, and we note that Honorable Hansinger will be with us until 18 hours if he's already in. You'll indicate at the time when you leave. Otherwise, I think let's shoot straight to the first presenter.
Chairperson.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, my friend, that at 2 o'clock I have to go. My brother's wife is sick in Tembisa. I have to go and see her.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Hey, Chair.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I'd like to check with Honorable Sikolo. Shouldn't we, I don't know whether the conversion happens now or at one when Honorable Hansinger leaves. Because as and when he leaves, he can thus be converted into a full member of the committee. I'm not sure whether we do that now while Honorable Hansinger is in the meeting or at one when he leaves.
Yeah, no. Let's do it at one. I'm afraid of the chaos if Honorable Hansinger is not here from the morning until 3 o'clock. 1 o'clock we'll do the conversion.
All right. Also note, at 3 o'clock I might also have to leave.
We might be finished around that time. Let's push and see. Thank you very much. Let's entertain a submission by a young lady. I'm told is still a youth who represents Railroad Association of South Africa. If you are ready, ma'am, over to you. You have from now up until 10. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Ms. Sela Ntlapo. I represent the Railroad Association. And I will share my screen now to go into our presentation. I trust that the members can see my screen.
Yes, we can see it very clear.
Okay, perfect. So as I said, my name is Ms. Philan Trapon. I represent the Railroad Association. We are an industry body. We represent original equipment manufacturers, rail components manufacturers, rail operators, private and public in some instances. And we are also associated with the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition. And how we have a relationship with DTIC is that we are an export council with a mandate to promote export on the region, the continent and the rest of the world. And we are also recognized or formally recognized by the Railway Safety Regulator in terms of the Act, Section 7 2B, where it provides that the regulator may formally recognize an industry body, and in this instance, it's the Railroad Association. We are also an employer body at the Transport Education Training and Authority, where we assist in terms of guiding and providing direction in terms of the skills that will be required by our sector into the future. Also, as a background, as an industry body, we do a lot of participation on the continent with our missions, whether it's our Angola on the region and the rest of the continent. We do participate on NEPAD level, UNECA and African Union. We do get a formal invitation on those bodies. So we are a recognized association locally and beyond. When it comes to the bill itself, our general concern on the content of the bill is that we believe that through our interaction with Department of Transport, that the national transport policy may be lagging behind, as well as the national rail policy. So it would have been quite important to have this process hand in hand, and having a little bit of movement on both policies, so as to ensure that there is a greater result out of the economic regulator bill or the act when it comes into effect. And our understanding is that this needs to be finalized, maybe adopted together, as I've alluded to earlier, and to have a coherent policy direction instead of having maybe one policy still lagging behind, as to maximize what we have to do as a sector. And by ensuring that we move hand in hand with the economic regulator, the national rail policy, it also will allow us to, at least as an industry body, to achieve some of our goals, which includes the revitalization of the sector, transformation of the sector, and basically to support the sector from what we stand for in terms of supporting certain policies. Now, we had spoken about transformation of the sector. Transformation of the sector, we mean a complete change of the status quo, which we think that the economic regulator will bring that to life, and towards an environment that supports and stimulates and unlocks economic value, bringing about an entirely different level of effectiveness. In principle, we broadly support the bill. And the funding structure of the regulator and the rail operators and permit holders are already funding the railway safety regulator through fees. With the funding structure that we see or reflected on the safety regulator apply also to the economic regulator. And my worry is, as well, at least our worry as an association, that whilst we try to bring in small, medium enterprises that may not necessarily have the funds to compete with larger organizations, this may be a barrier that maybe we may not have taken into consideration. And in terms of the capital cost, we believe that the network is a great asset to the country, and the price control should not necessarily include the capital cost, but rather concentrate on improving the utilization of the lines. And the implementation rather of the act, we hope that it will bring about lowering barriers to entry for small operators. We may also want you to look at the entire value chain of the rail market, and how this bill will support the manufacturing sector. Currently, South African rail manufacturers or services providers rely on two main customers, which is PRASA and Transnet. The reality is that this government has provided the rail sector with so many opportunities that we have grown to such an extent that those two companies are no longer enough, to feed the sector. So we need to grow and find other areas within the sector that will support the manufacturing capacity that we currently have and grow into the rest of the region and the continent. As I said earlier, that one of our roles, at least the mandate that is provided by the DTIC, is export promotion. The president has said last year in his State of the Nation address that we need to build an export-based economy. So this is where we think that the bill will be very critical in supporting the vision, either it's IPEP or the National Development Plan. We also have small, medium enterprises that are manufacturing, but have been gone through supplier development through either PRASA or Transnet. So we need to, they can't stay being supply developers, development for a long time, but we need to grow these companies. We need to launch them onto the continent. Now, this vision of the manufacturing perspective is also supported by the resolution that was taken by the African Union at the 24th ordinary session that took place on the 30th and the 31st of January 2015, where the Union, the AU, declared South Africa to champion the manufacture of rolling stock for the continent. And I think that responsibility lies with South Africa, not only public, but private as well. The continent is waiting for us to share our expertise, to share our products with them, but most importantly, we need to start localizing in different countries on the continent to share our skills with the brothers and sisters and to realize the integration of the continent. The integration of the continent will bring about at least the implementation of the CFTA. We as South Africa, we're currently holding we're leading the CFTA based in Ghana. We're leading African Union through the chair of Honorable President Cyril Ramaphosa. Where we are at the moment as a country, we have a very important position on the continent that will bring about change, particularly for our sector. Going back to the bill, the relationship of the Competition Commission between the economic regulator and the Competition Commission, we need to have a clear understanding of the relationship between the economic regulator and the Competition Commission. It appears to me, at least at face value, that there may be an overlap, and we think that perhaps that needs to be looked at to make sure that there is separation of what the economic regulator does and what the Competition Commission does. We also need to establish the nature of the complaints that the operator can take to the Competition Commission and which one can take to the regulator. So for instance, if a private operator is denied access onto the main network, the regulator would normally handle those issues to ensure that there is a fair access onto the network. But at the same time, if the industry or operator still feels that there needs to be perhaps a market inquiry into the market dominance by an SOE, and in this case, Transnet, we need to be able to know which entity takes which responsibility, either the economic regulator or the competition, and where the overlap is, and at what point can they work together as well. And in the bill also, there is a section where it says, where the regulator needs to undertake the market inquiry at its cost, at a cost. So the regulator can do a market inquiry, or the minister may request a market inquiry, but any other third party will have to fund that market inquiry. So we think that there may be a misalignment there, because the Competition Commission would normally fund market inquiries, particularly those that are seen to be in the best interest of the public. The bill also currently provides for a regulator to initiate, as I've covered that, and we feel that the regulator to conduct an inquiry, as long as we can show that the matter that they need to provide an inquiry, market inquiry for, it's in the public interest. It should not necessarily be funded by the party that is requesting a market study, but rather we should use the same model that the Competition Commission uses to ensure that we don't overburden the sector any more than we should. Currently, in terms of establishing pricing for the regulator, economic regulator, we are not sure what methodologies would be used, but we know already that the Competition Commission, they have several methodologies that are using, and maybe can be adapted for each sector that it regulates, and would like to maybe have a more clearer or more intimate relationship between the regulator and the Competition Commission. As I've said, there may be an overlap there. And the bill does not explicitly provide for the consultation with operators on setting the fees. So currently, the fees for the railway safety regulator are determined by the regulator and Department of Transport, and there is no consultation with private sector. And we think that this needs to be clearly spelled out, and that the participation of the regulated parties will be required. Now, this will be a response to the Batufili principles that promotes consultation with the public, because whether we like it or not, the economic regulator, whether the fees are fair or not, eventually will the cost, if they're excessive, will end up in the pockets of the normal South African. The bill does not provide for the participation of an independent industry body such as ourselves. And this point is important because with the current safety regulator, in terms of the Act, there is a Section 72B that give us a status that we would work with the regulator to develop industry standards. And I think that the participation of an industry body, it will be very, very, very important to ensure that the regulator performs its duties in consultation with the regulated entities and ensure greater participation with the industry in general. We believe that we have spent a long time as private sector and public sector and honorable members that we've been talking past each other. And I think it's important that we start talking to each other. And one of the requests that I would also like to make to this portfolio committee is that we need to find a way of a formal structure, particularly for rail, where we'll develop a rail task team, which will work with the executive to ensure that there is a greater alignment from the country point of view, so that we can somehow influence the region and influence the rest of the continent to ensure that the integration of the continent happens and happens very quickly, because it has indirect benefits for South African companies and Africans in general. We then did a survey on the private movement or access onto the network after we have received numerous complaints from private operators. And the private operators would include over 200 permit holders as allowed by the RSR to be permit holders, and we refer them interchangeably as operators or permit holders. And the interesting feature of the survey were preferred to remain anonymous. There is a general fear by industry not to be free when it comes to matters of state-owned entities, that they may be punished if they were to raise issues in a particular way. And in most instances, we have to come in as an industry body to negotiate or at least open up negotiations with them. That is not my dog. In one instance, the operator has been charged a certain fee that was quite excessive. We then initiated a conversation between the operator and Transnet. And through negotiations, which were quite long and with the SOE not willing to back off, once we came in and explained to them that there is an element of unfair competition that is displayed by the SOE, the particular private operator received a 60% discount on the fee that they were charged at that particular time. Now, you will know that if you receive 5%, maybe yes, but 60% is a clear sign that there is a lack of transparency. There is a natural monopoly that is presented by the particular state-owned entity. We had asked a few questions, and including that, do they experience excessive delays in achieving the private movement within the country or the borders? And the response was the request placement and actual placement can vary between 6 hours and to be executed. Now, there is a lot of inefficiencies. Now, if you want to have rail as the backbone of this country, we cannot allow or at least promote that a state-owned entity has a severe impact on the country's economy in general. So this lack of reliability actually promotes the move from rail to road. Road has become cheaper. Road is becoming, or has become, much more reliable. So the strategy of moving from road to rail can only be achieved by a greater participation of private operators that will gain access onto the network with reasonable prices that are fair to all parties concerned, that are operators and are regulated by the Railway Safety Regulator and will eventually be regulated by the economic regulator. Excessive delays and no one taking accountability for those delays. In private sector, if one were to perform in this way, one, the company would have collapsed long time ago, or somebody would not have a job anymore. And we asked if the delays have been quantified in terms of rands and cents, and they said the road to rail ratio has changed over the number of years due to the fact that rail was inconsistent. Having a monopolistic environment, there's no competition taking place. There is no benefit for the SOE that has the monopoly to give superior services to their customers. And then this drive costs unnecessarily so, and then these costs are then passed on to the private operators, and in some instances, maybe promoting you know, kicking out, in a way, inverted commas, competition. So there's a lot of a misalignment or conflict of interest when a SOE is an operator and at the same time, the one determines the fee and how and when you're going to get access and onto the network. Road deliveries themselves, they now have a fair advantage and dealing with rail on an ad hoc basis, which means that there is a demand that is waiting for us on the other side if this bill access, third party access into the network is realized and the management or an economic regulator is put in place as soon as possible. In 2019, anonymous, as I said, that company preferred to stay anonymous because they fear that the particular SOE may punish them. They have experienced a delay of 295 days. I mean, that is a lot. At an average lease rate of $1,000 per locomotive per day, this translates to more than 5 million of lost revenue alone. Now, 5 million is a lot of money. If I lose that money, put it in the dustbin, it's a lot of money. But if we can translate this 5 million into job creation, or at least job retention, creation is even something else, but to retain the job and the skills that we have, and such delays have an impact on the employment of our brothers and sisters in the country. And there was also a question of the service that they are receiving from Transnet for private movement, if it's affecting the viability of their business, or and calling into question whether to continue use rail as mode of transport. And the response was, although there are challenges in terms of delay, private movements by rail remains most cost-effective mode of transport. Delays result in potential inability of business to maintain asset integrity, which has a domino effect in terms of providing a reliable service to our clients. And then this company has made plans to move to road as TFR services are inconsistent and are placing lack of transparency and is bad for business. And honorable members, you'd agree that rail is green, it's cost efficient. So the participation of private sector in this space will benefit the country in the short term, immediate short term to long term. And as I said, the bigger vision is to be prepared now for a South Africa so that we can provide and export services and equipment to the rest of the continent. Before I say thank you, I just want to also expand on the importance of this bill on the entire value chain. So we have a designation policy and local content policy, which supports the industrial policy action plan or the reimagined one. And it comes with a certain obligation either on the state or the big companies that have signed contracts with the state that there need to be localization of manufacturing of components or services into the country. And most importantly, to transform the railway sector to bring the likes of Misela that were largely disenfranchised by the history of this country, to bring them into the main economy. But what we found that the good intention of government of placing the responsibility with either the SOE or the big contract holders has not translated into good opportunities for South African companies, particularly those that are starting your SMMEs, and there is a lack of sustainability in terms of what some of these policies were trying to achieve. Now, what I mean by that is that some of the contracts by the state particularly for the rail sector, which is quite capital intensive. We would sign a contract with the likes of Transnet, and in that contract there is a clause that says as and when, meaning that I could have a 20 billion contract for a period of 5 years, but that contract is not really a contract because it does not guarantee me as a service provider that or a manufacturer that I will be able to manufacture to a standard that is required and sustain the business and build the manufacturing capacity that we have sort of diminished over the past 3 years. So that as and when clause that we normally find in this contract has a bearing on the entire value chain. Now, we understand that government cannot guarantee in some instances the quantities that are going to be procured. But now if we have more private sector participation, particularly as operators, then the number of participants or the number of operators that will seek business or at least supply from the current manufacturers will then try to balance. And the likes of Transnet or Transnet Engineering and BRASA have not procured in the last, have not procured decently in the last 3 years and have experienced significant problems. Now, those problems have translated into the industry. The industry has been bleeding for a very long time because it's only two customers, main customers. But by opening up the sector, we then saving the companies that are relying on BRASA and Transnet only for business, and we opening up the sector for them, but there are other operators that they can offer their products and services to. The business of Transnet has changed over the years. It's not the, they don't have the demand that at least we think that they have. The reality is that Transnet itself has to go and bid on the continent and look for opportunities. In some instances, there's no demand. In some instances, there's a demand. But there's also the maintenance part that needs to be done. So we need to find a nice balance in terms of looking at this bill. There is a holistic approach that the bill supports the other manufacturing sector that we have promoted through supply development and some of the obligations that we had placed either on the 1064 or on the Kibela project and many other projects. We also looking at the services sector where there used to be monopoly in terms of track maintenance. Now, one particular company has signed the famous as and when contract with Transnet, and the same company then went to the IDC to seek funding for their project, and then with an as and when, then between IDC, them and Transnet, they sort of agreed on a guaranteed a structure. But the problem now is when if Transnet were to take away that guarantee, the black-owned company that we're trying to develop is left with a debt by IDC, and they cannot provide services because Transnet says as and when. And it's important that when we put about policy, we do a proper consultation, or at least it talks to the rail task team that we are proposing, that we start, being a big brother to each other in a way that we are able to share experiences, at least from our side, and then the member of parliament when they use their power to develop legislation, that we make sure that it's not only legislation, but is legislation that could be implemented and with the support of private sector. DTIC for us has been quite supportive. We work with the Export Secretariat. We support the Trade Investment Africa, the vision on to going to the continent to ensure that there's increase of intra-Africa trade. We currently, as a continent, looking at about 15, say at most 17% trade within the continent. Now, through rail and opening up the market and ensuring that South Africans are receiving, are getting a bigger participation into the sector. We will be able to increase trade within our with our brothers and sisters on the continent. And we are also advocating for the increase of African content on African projects. Now, as Africa, and is alluded by the African Union, from the African Union perspective, in aspiration number 6, it provides that the development of Africa must rely on the potential of Africans, particularly its women and children. Now, if we want to alleviate poverty, if we want to stop talking about the poor of the poor, we need to make some serious changes within our economic structure. And we need to put our the people of this country, the region and the rest of the continent first to ensure that we are able to develop the country and put Africans as a priority to ensure that the little that we're trying to achieve as a country can be seen through the next generations to come. Funding has always been a huge challenge for the capital intensive market. But we are also advocating for the ratification of the Luxembourg Rail Protocol to the Cape Town Convention. Now, most people say that's a fancy word and the Luxembourg sounds very much European. Are we being colonized again? I said, no, we're not being colonized, but it's merely a legal instrument that will facilitate that the funding of locomotive or rolling stock is not only a responsibility of the state. Now, Chairperson, if you had a company that was a funder, you would want to to ensure that when you fund an asset, your asset is protected, whether it's in South Africa or the rest of the of the continent. You will want to make sure that there is a legal instrument that you are able to go into Zambia, Tanzania, or anywhere else on the continent to recover your asset if you have to recover your asset. Now, this decreases the risk for the asset owner. And then if the risk is lower, that means your funding requirements becomes lower. So instead of paying a higher percentage in terms of the interest that you pay on your loan, it reduces that significantly. So it is, we recently did a study with Auxerra, where it clearly demonstrates the benefits of using legislation to reduce the burden on the state to procure the rolling stock. And the same principle, by the way, it applies in the aircraft industry, of which the aircraft protocol as South Africa, we have ratified. And in a nutshell, as an industry body, we appeal to government that the economic regulator becomes a reality as soon as possible, because the survival of this country is not only government's responsibility, but we want to work with government to ensure that we alleviate poverty, we achieve together some of the visions that you have for the country. And it's also important to note that there is a general concern on the continent that our footprint as South Africa is disappearing. And I think that once we start building locally, then we can go onto the continent and set up businesses there and work with our brothers and sisters on the continent. But it has to start here at home. It has to start with opening up the market. It has to start with opening up the rail network. It has to start with taking responsibility as private citizens to work with government. It has to start with a basic understanding that as Messina, I do not seek a permission on a daily basis to from Chairperson or the government to access the N3, the N1, but in terms of rail, we need to ask for special permission and talk to them nicely, and it comes with excessive fees, and it generally makes the rail industry not competitive. We want to go back to rail. We want to see the 84% of the grain market that has since disappeared to road come back to rail. We want to see the timber of the road back into the rail. The rail industry has so much potential. It's not the services, it's not this bill, but it's the impact that this bill will have on the rest of the economy. Not leaving behind the rail policy that I've mentioned earlier, not leaving behind the transport policy that I've alluded to earlier. So my appeal to the members, honorable members, is that this policy be treated with care, with and realizing the potential that it presents to the entire economy, not only to as a bill that seeks to address monopolistic issues, but as a bill that arms the state to deliver on their mandate to create employment. So we want to be a partner in the creation of employment. I will stop there for now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Memisila Skekete.
So what?
Sikuzwile ma. Sikuzwile. Let me allow honorable members, if they have anything to comment, clarity seeking questions. The floor is yours. Let me see hands that wishes to participate. Honorable Hansinger, Honorable Kheta Mabala, in that order, please.
Honorable Mai.
Yes, I can see you now. And then after you, it will be Honorable Ramadwa. And Honorable Ramadwa will be followed by Mhloni Shwamapena and Honorable Lawrence McDonald. In that order, please. Honorable Hansinger.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, everybody. Madam Mhlapo, thank you very much for your submission. Also for your input, the insights that you have provided and the experience that you've shared with us. You certainly impressed and represented your organization very well. Your vision and role is a positive and an encouraging one, and I wish you well in particular in your endeavors to expand export interests. With regards to your comments and comments on the bill, and for your very strong argument that rail in particular should be included, especially freight rail as part of the economic regulation. I want to ask you the following questions. You placed a lot of emphasis on the role of the whole value chain. You referred to supply chain, small business, manufacturing, small operators, and export promotion. You referred to the NDP as a directive policy direction, but then in relation to the value chain that you mentioned, you spoke of transformation. Could you expand on the content of your thinking around transformation, on the how and the what of the role of the regulator, and how the regulator can contribute, especially on the how and what aspects of that? Then you also briefly expressed your thinking around the regulator that should also should provide an adjudication role as to the use of state assets. In other words, platforms, rail, signal equipment, everything within the rail asset environment owned by government. That the regulator should be this accessible adjudicator. Could you expand on your thinking around that? In that regard, you then also referred to, from your current experience, proper consultation with operators, particularly around the setting of fees. What do you propose as an ideal process for such a consultation process, particularly on the setting of fees and what you described as what should be a proper consultation? What would that proper consultation be in your thinking? It was quite sad to again realize from your submission, you know, that we have this very sad ratio scenario of 5% freight being transported by rail and 95% on roads, something that definitely needs to be addressed. And you then expressed a thinking that had there been an economic regulator in managing the split between private accessibility to rail opposed to what you described, had that been in place, in other words, a regulator that can open up opportunity on state-owned rail infrastructure for private sector, then we would have had a better ratio. What is your thinking around passenger and commuter transport in the same regard? Because this is all about efficiency and effectiveness in currently having this awkward ratio of a 95%, 5% road rail ratio. It's all about effectiveness and efficiency. In your thinking, would it also be and lead to a more effective and efficient commuter and passenger service if we had private sector involvement in the transportation of commuters and passengers? The chairperson, thank you very much. I again would want to thank the input of Railroad Association through the presentation of Madam Mtlapu. And again, good luck to you and your organization. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Onsinger, for the detailed questions. Let's get, if you can lower your hand, let's get Honorable Keta Mabala. Thank you very much for cooperation. Thank you.
Monday. Thank you, Chairperson. And I want to thank the Mrs. Ntapo for her presentation. Actually, it was a very detailed presentation from their organization. But there's only two things that I want to find out from them, because if you check their presentation, they say there's a general concern about the process. If they can unpack that, why do they say they have the concern about the process of the bill? And the other interpretation is that they want the clear understanding of the relationship between the economy regulator and the Competition Commission. Now I'm trying to check the thinking around that understanding or relationship between the economy regulators and the Competition Commission. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Mangbong, I'm on this.
Thank you, Chairperson. What we need in South Africa is job creation. One of the Railroad Association concerns is that small business cannot become involved as a result of a shortage of money, skills, etc. I've heard this complaints many times, but what South Africa needs is growth. Growth needs big money, therefore big business. Therefore, isn't it time for small business to come together and also form bigger companies? It is not our duty to protect small business, but to see South Africa economy grow to create more and more new jobs. Big business can create millions and millions of jobs. I have read that they have more than 800 billion rand available, but what they need is political stability. I agree, we must return to rail, and I hope one day I can travel from Cape Town to Egypt. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable May. We'll try and make sure that you one day you travel to from Cape Town to Egypt.
Yeah.
Honorable Ramadwa.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Ndimacheroni.
Abu Duri.
Rihone ringavusange. Honorable Chairperson.
Yes.
Firstly, I would like to welcome the presentation from RRA. It was comprehensive. Chairperson, mine is questions for clarity. During the presentation, she indicated that they are suggesting that there must be a rail task team. So I want to check, how is this going to be composed? That is my first question. The second one is that she indicated that we are not going to be, it's not about colonizing again. So I want to check with her that if you are, she is saying we are not going to be colonized again. If you are having an asset and your assets are in other country and those assets are being controlled there in the other country, and you don't have say on the acts and also the legislations in other country, is it not colonization? That's my submission. Thank you, Chairperson.
Zwabuti Burama Adwa. Can you lower your hand, please, Honorable Ramadwa, so that we can take Honorable Mapeno.
Oh yes. Good morning, colleagues. No, thank you so much. I think let me also thank I'm not sure if it's Miss Nkampo or Mrs. Nkampo. But thank you for the presentation. I think only one or two questions, clarity seeking questions. But also I was a bit interested in the is it a service provider or in a player which you went to represent and make submissions on their behalf so that they can also so that they can get the discount where they ended up getting that 60% discount from, I think it was Transnet, if I'm not mistaken. How often do those incidents happen? And in this case, I heard you say that the SOE initially was not budging and it was not interested. But then after it had conceded to say that they had made an error, was there any, did they give you any reasons whatsoever behind the decision for them that they made initially? And I think in terms of the conflict with the competition Commission Act, I think that is a general concern that we are receiving from many of the submissions that we're getting. I think it's the same thing which was expressed by, if I'm not mistaken, it was expressed by Gautrain, expressed by, and a few other submissions that we that we got. So it seems that the bill, in as far as that is concerned, and in as far as to which act or which law supersedes which other law, should, after the bill is enacted. So I think, as far as that is concerned, I think that is something that the committee has taken note of, and it's something that we'll have to grapple with and also see how that can be resolved. Thank you so much, Chair.
How much trouble was I'm so nice? I was hanging my food to a trade. Servo. Servo. Honorable McDonald.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, colleagues. Also would like to thank the presentation of Mayor Nhlapo from the Railroad Association. She has actually highlighted the serious problem in the rail industry or the transport industry in South Africa, that Transnet has monopolized the railroad. Praza and Transnet with the skewed ownership of rails infrastructure has actually monopolized it to such extent that our roads are being abused because of all the freight cargo that's on the road, and they have a monopoly and they've priced themselves out of the market for goods on rail. The relationship is so skewed that cargo has preference over passengers in this country, and that is unbelievable. It's unbelievable. But I'm glad of the submission they've made. I agree that the rail and specifically the cargo must be looked at in this bill as well. My question to her would be, from a railroad association, could she give us some insights or the percentage of local content that is provided to railroad spares, parts, wheels, and specifically how much of this purchases are done to black economic empowerment companies? I thank you, Chair.
Could you please lower your hand? Thank you very much, Honorable McDonald. I think I've dealt with all the hands which were there. May Missila.
Yep, President.
Nako kya home.
Just got disturbed by my mother's WhatsApp. She says, tell a member of parliament that your other surname is Kikope. Okay, Mama, I'll tell them. Yes. To honorable member, Ubaba Hasinga referred to the question of transformation. Transformation is twofold. Transformation where we are coming from is the transformation of the sector. We have gone through stages since a democracy where we, I the transformation in terms of job availability through affirmative action and being trained as an engineer, going through the ranks. Now I have my own company. Now the market is still monopoly, but as whether I'm a black-owned company or a black women-owned company, you are still at disadvantage in a sense that the market is not open. It's still monopolized. So what we are advocating for is the transformation that was required to take place is there, and we are making progress, but we also need to see the complete transformation of the rail sector itself. So that's where the transformation that we are alluding to on different levels, the efficiency, getting the freight markets from roads back to rail. And it's also aligned with the green economy. Rail is greener. Rail is efficient. Rail is cheaper. So that is the transformation that we are referring to. And with regards to the adjudication role that the association or the regulated companies or private operators or any other operator. I think currently there may be the structure that is used is more of funding the regulator more than having a fee that is fair. So the regulator is funded by private operators, which bears a fee that should not necessarily be carried by the operator. But perhaps you could look into the structure of the fee, whether it's reasonable or not. When we normally have your electricity pricing, there is some level of participation. But in this instance, the companies that are funding the regulator must be part of that conversation, because you don't want to have 200 operators and then you charge excessive pricing, then you're only left with 100 operators. So the idea is to grow. The more we have, the more we'll reduce the cost of doing business in race. That's the proper consultation as the parties that will be directly impacted by the fees, that will be directly impacted by the regulator itself. There needs to be a level of working together just to ensure that we don't leave anyone behind or coming after the fact and be complaining. Private sector, we want to work. We are not in the business of complaining. We want to work. I alluded earlier to the grain market that we have lost a huge percentage, but we have not only lost locally. Currently, there are trucks that are transporting maize from either northwest into the DRC. Rail could do that. And the spin-off that comes with that, we could do that. The likes of Tanzania, when they were not on lockdown, they've taken part of the share of our share in the market. So the more we open up, the more we increase our capacity as a rail sector to service not only South Africa, but to work with our brothers and sisters on the rest of the continent. There is a lot of potential on the continent for South African companies. We have Ompit that has worked at Transnet for a number of years. Now, Ompit, we can start an academy with Ompit that will be able to teach the youth and share his experiences from being happy to be where he was when he left the state-owned entities. We have a number of retired engineers that want to participate in the railway sector, that want to share their experiences. Maybe one of these days, Mr. Chairperson, will have a rail school that is open to the public. We have spent so much money investing in the new build program, and I think we need to start investing in education to match the investment that we've put in place. The access ratio at the moment, unfortunately, it's quite low, and hence this bill has become very important. And all the private operators asking for is that Chairperson, tell us the date. Passenger transport is an interesting case because mostly in the world, there are few pockets in the world where passenger rail lies entirely in the hands of the private sector. And passenger rail largely is still subsidized by the state. And the simple example that we have with Gautrain is a public-private partnership. And the way that contract or the way the operation is done, maybe we could learn from it. So for instance, in Europe or anywhere else, the service provider will sign a service level agreement. And if then they would need to ensure that the efficiency at least is at between 90 and 95%. And if they drop below those standards, then there is a fine that goes with that. And that in itself, because it hits in their pocket, there is a benefit for the operator to ensure that there is efficiency. So there are different models that we could look at, but in general, the responsibility for passenger rail still stays with the state. And Yeah, so passenger rail, it should still largely lie with the state, but the participation and working with the likes of Transnet is going to be key. They maybe having the new lady, the CEO on the operator side, and having the experience of Bombardier, we think that that may add value to where perhaps we should go as a particularly on the passenger rail side. But having said that, I see other opportunities on the passenger rail side. Now imagine if ZCC in Moria were to be a private operator or were to be in partnership with government. You will remove so much traffic on the N1. The ZCC has a number of people that go there on a weekly basis. Now, there is a demand waiting for us. Mr. Chairperson, I'm saying I want to go to ZCC, get rail, and have a station there. And because ZCC will guarantee the numbers, there is demand. Partnerships. I think I've addressed all your concerns, Mr. Hasinga. If I have left anything out, you'll point out. Thank you. Then next one is the Ketamabala. I hope I get it right.
You are right, ma'am. You are right.
Okay. So there's that competition commission issue. The clarification that I want to provide is that going through the bill, there is a lot of interlapping and interest where is this an economic regulator thing or is it a competition commission or what's the story? So if I go back to when we had an interesting meeting with the company that grants access or determine the fees, we actually informed them that their actions or their fees actually may be against that particular competition commission, and the commission may look at it differently. It is when there we got a retraction of those excessive fees. At what point do we have a matter of the competition commission? At what point do you have a matter of the economic regulator? Currently, the competition commission can do detailed market studies, but at the same time, now we are going to be doubling up on what the economic regulator can do, whereas that capacity is existing in the competition commission. So maybe an overlap that this is where we want to seek clarification as to where does the economic regulator start and end, and where does the competition commission start and end. So there's a lot of overlap there that we need to, you know, to clarify and attend to and make it as clear as possible. And there was one, if Mr. Ketamabala can remind, the process of leaving behind, if you can remind me of your first question. Oh, the process of participation, whether on the adjudicating committee or the process of actually of the economic regulator bill. So initially we had the rail, national rail policy draft. It's still standing at the draft white paper. The provisions that we're dealing with today of the economic regulator are contained in that draft policy. So what I'm saying is that the economic regulator part is also mentioned in the rail policy as a draft white paper. Maybe perhaps we could try to streamline policies when we deal with them so that we don't leave behind any policy that will bring maximum effect on the current bill that we're dealing with. Babu Ketamabala, have I addressed everything?
Okay, leave that to me, ma'am.
All right. Okay, thank you. And then Peter May, he talked about job creation, small business, big business, political stability. I'm not a politician. I would like to stay on my side of the fence. But having said that, I do recognize that the importance of working with government is important as private sector. Job creation, I would like to start at job retention. I have said earlier that there is a clause in some of the contracts that says as and when. So as private sector, I cannot employ Dumsani on an as and when basis. I can't tell Dumsani, oh, Transnet has placed an order, please come tomorrow. We finish producing, then you know, go and stay at home. When Transnet orders again, I will call you again. So let's start with sustaining the jobs that we have today before we even start of job creation. And the big business and small business, I've always worked in small businesses. And this is where the innovation of this country came from. And if you look at your creepy crawly, came out of a garage of a small business. And a big business, yes, they are good, but at the same time, we should not discount the importance of small businesses. Big business, they start as small businesses, and there's nothing wrong in remaining that size if a company chooses to. And the impact of the small business when it slows down, it's minimal as compared to the bigger business. They retrench 10,000 people today. But I think the South African economy, from when at least I was born, it has always relied on small businesses. But to discount the importance of small business in this country, particularly post-COVID, it needs to be looked at differently. Most people that have lost their jobs have gone into business, and those are small businesses. And I think they've got a lot to contribute to the economy. Then there was a question by Rama Adwa, and the clarity on the task team and the composition. Working with government will be important, but the composition, we think it will include the Department of Transport. It will include Department of Public Enterprises. It will also include Mr. Moneybags Treasury. And maybe eventually reporting to the Presidential Infrastructure Committee or to the leader of business in government. And the task team will obviously have independent parties like ourselves from the rail sector, but we have to work with government to work together to have a process that works in the best interest of the country. Such a structure is not new. It has always been there previously, and it has sort of like over the years, we have pulled in different directions of us and them. And I'm using this platform to appeal to government that we are done with us and them. All we want is to work with government for the best interests of the country. I mentioned the Luxembourg Rail Protocol. The Rail Protocol is a legal, the private legal instrument. To be colonized previously, people come in and take over, but this is a legal instrument that we are already using as a country for the aircraft market and the aviation market. So it's not a law that we are not using. But if Transnet today were to lease their rolling stock into Zimbabwe, into Angola, or anywhere else on the continent, they may put it as a condition that our leasing of our locomotive will be done if you ratify the Luxembourg Rail Protocol. That will then guarantee that Transnet, if they have to go and retrieve their rolling stock in Angola or anywhere else on the continent, they are able to use the law to retrieve their asset. But it also reduces the finance cost for the state. It is said that it reduced about 7.3% according to the study, which I can share with the members at the appropriate time. And to be colonized again, Mama, we may also have to look at an African standard. And one of the reasons that we don't have a harmonized rail on the continent is that it depends who colonized you. You have a Cape gauge, and at the moment we're building standard gauge, and you know. So to be harmonized, we may start looking at an African standard, not only in rail, but in other sectors as well. Because what we find is that we sign a contract with an EU-based company we tell them that they were set up in the country. They then come with their companies from France or wherever. Then when they get into the country, we tell them that you're going to localize. Now, NMSL, I can't participate in that localization because that company demands that I have an EU standard. Now, to get an EU standard, I have to pay an EU standard body to get that accreditation to do business in my own country. Now, I'm saying EU standard in whose country and in whose continent? I'm therefore saying that there is a need for the continent to have a development of an African standard that is aligned with what we want to have as a continent. And I'm not suggesting that we reinvent the wheel. There are standards that we can incorporate in that what works and what don't work for us. There are standards that are over-designed that do not necessarily that are not necessarily applicable in this country. We continually are being treated as if we have never run railways before. I mean, this country has been running railways for years. The likes of Transnet, the likes of Ompit, wherever is sitting at an old age home, have an experience. They can contribute greatly into the direction of rail on the continent. And so the adoption of the protocol is important. The ratification of the protocol is going to be key to open up funding to ensure that we relieve the state from procuring rolling stock, but rather perhaps the state will spend less, and you, Mr. Zwane, or anyone can be a funder, and that your fund will be you as a creditor, your interest will be protected through this private law. Babma Pena, excessive fees at Transnet. In this particular case, Babma Pena, you take what you, if you get a discount, you take what you're given, you run. You don't ask too many questions and you don't look behind. And reasons were not given. If somebody says something, if I vote today and tomorrow about 2 cents, I will not ask why. I will take whatever I'm given and run very fast because they might change their minds. I think the Competition Commission issue with that conflict, the overlap, I think you said that you are looking into that. But the excessive fees also means that because they get charged onto private sector, it also increases the cost of those private operators. And we think, to be quite honest, is unnecessary. Let's work together to ensure that we build the railway sector, that it continues when it starts being efficient through private sector participation. And Ubaba McDonald referred to the monopoly, the inefficiency, and local content. Yes, Transnet, BRASA, access to the network is still largely monopolistic in nature. And we're quite excited that we are where we are and that we have a listening government that have not ignored our pleas that we need to look at this structure of the economy, that we could contribute better as private sector into the economy through regulatory bodies such as the economic regulator. The inefficiency, we know the numbers do tell that we could do more. The agricultural space have been, you know, we've consulted with them. They want to come back on rail. Your concrete silos have rail siding, and they are operators or permit holders, but they have to rely on Transnet for the movement of their products. They are not necessarily rail. Their business is not rail, but their business is still on the agricultural side. So we need to make sure that those sectors that are very important to South Africa, that the food security, we find ways of ensuring that we can deliver what we need to deliver to the masses of this country. Particularly food security is important. Sectoral local content and the percentages. The local content policy had some a defect in a way in terms of implementation. So the DTIC had developed a policy, but the implementation of that policy was not clear, or the provision of funding to ensure that the local content that is supposed to take place does take place. Currently, South African Bureau of Standards is the custodian of verifying local content. And we are not sure how much has been done. We do know that BRASA has not renewed their commitment to SABS to ensure that there is local content verification taking place, for whether it's from the Gibela contract perspective or any other contract that BRASA has. So there is that engagement or relationship that still need to take place or go back to ensure that BRASA does participate in this process, particularly as a state entity. So there is little local content verification that has been done, or at least that we know of. And when you do local content verification, who does it? Previously was done by consultants. Now, my worry with consultants is somebody that will do verification for something that is quite technical, and where else they don't even know the difference between a bulletin and that. So in terms of who does the verification also is important. And some contracts are confidential, or most contracts are confidential. The Gibela contract, we don't know what has been agreed to in terms of local content, because when that was signed, it was prior to the designation and local policy, local content policy coming to place. So we don't have sight of those contracts. We don't know what was agreed to or not agreed to. the 1064 contract, the Chinese were impossible. We tried to work with them. And in some instances, they gave us drawings in Chinese, and to negotiate with them, we had to get Chinese interpreters. And but from the ones that were at least based in Pretoria, we managed to get a working relationship going. So some of the the local companies did supply into that project. But I also need to note them, the likes of Bombardier and General Electric WAPTEC. Some of them may have taken longer to supply, but we, from these two companies, we have seen a proper supply development taking place. So they will take the supplier, the company, through different stages, assist them technically, and to grow them. And once they are approved by Bombardier, they find it easier to tap into Gibela and other projects. So that local content from the manufacturing building base is important. Transnet has been supporting that. DTIC has been very strong, particularly the rail sector desk. We are being supported by also from the ministerial perspective. So government on the local content is quite supportive. The challenge always comes into the implementation of the policy. Now, I'll go back to say that we want to work together. Government creates policy, because I operate on the implementation side, or at least where I want to see a policy being implemented. If we were to work together, and we'll be able to share experiences and come up with a policy that could be implemented and benefit the sector in a way. I'm not sure if I've covered everything.
Nemsile, you did your best. I think, let me say at this point in time, we really appreciate you taking time off your busy schedule to come and address us. We have heard your plea that it should not be us and them. In fact, you are saying Sivuli gate. No, the gate is wide open. That is why you are seated with us, because we want to hear you. We also want to give ordinary South Africans like you a chance to participate and mold this bill that we are meeting here to discuss. So do keep an eye as the bill rolls so that we don't lose you in the process. But we appreciate very much the inputs that you made. They shall be considered as we go along discussing this bill. At this point in time, I wish on behalf of the committee to say to you, thank you very much. And the company you represent for coming and sharing your views with us.
Bon Emina, honorable members, honorable McDonald, always want to be referred separately. Honorable McDonald, thank you very much. And other honorable members, we remain committed to this country. I only have one passport. I need to work in the best interest of this country. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I can see Honorable McDonald is very happy for having been singled out. Thank you, ma'am. Thank you. We shall see you next time as we meet. Thank
Great.
You.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. That was the Mayor, Ms. Ilan Shapo. Let me just check, because we are getting there, whether the organization Undoing Tax Abuse is ready to talk to us.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I know you are well known in this country. Your abbreviation is OUTA. Am I okay?
That's correct.
Let's allow you. You'll introduce yourself, sir, on behalf of your organization. But let me say right away, thank you for taking interest in this bill. We are ready to hear you, and we appreciate the fact that you have taken time out of your busy schedule to come and talk to this portfolio committee. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to all the honorable members. We appreciate the opportunity having presented to some of the finance committees. The time is usually very constrained there, so we appreciate a big chunk of time as well. I'll get right into it. My name is Matt Johnston. I'm the Parliamentary Engagement Manager for OUTA. I do say, Chairperson, that we are generally well known. Can I confirm, can you see the screen?
The screen is right in front of us, and we can see the writing on the screen there, Ned.
Thank you very much, Chair. So just to say who we are again, we are a non-profit company, and we are incorporated in terms of the Companies Act. We've also been approved as a public benefit organization in terms of the Income Tax Act. So we are financed by our supporters. Our supporters primarily consist of individual South Africans and small and medium-sized businesses. And they support our civil activism. They very much support our activity to empower civil society to engage constructively with government in opportunities like this. And in particular, our purpose is to ensure that tax revenue is spent well. Our vision is to ensure that money is spent in the public sector in a lawful way, and that the little bit of tax revenue that we have is spent in a frugal manner. We know, and I think it's important to highlight the context that we find ourselves in today, before I get to the specifics of the bill, that we are extremely constrained as an economy as a result of COVID-19 and state capture and general mismanagement of some of these large SOEs. We're in a very difficult economic position. So we welcome the bill in general, and we welcome its purpose. I'll get to those specifics. But I think it's important to highlight the context that led to the necessity of this bill and the problems that we faced as a result of monopolization in these transport industries. So again, the principles that we want to promote are public accountability, transparency, and good public governance. And those will be the themes throughout the presentation. So just to say where we come from, we used to be the Opposition Against Urban Tolling Alliance until 2016. We became known for challenging the e-toll system, which we've always believed is irrational and which has now proven to be the case. And in 2016, we became the Organization Undoing Tax Abuse, where we broadened our mandate to really engage with corruption, with misspending in government in general, and with maladministration. It's not always illegal, but sometimes it's just unethical. And we will address some of the examples that we faced in the transport industry as well. And just to say, our locations are Gauteng, Western Cape, and KwaZulu-Natal. So getting to the specifics, Chair and honorable members, why we care about this thing. I want to highlight this context. We've engaged on these specific entities in particular in the transport industry, and we've faced and challenged very serious problems in these companies. And looking at Transnet and Prasa, for example, have been absolutely dominant in the rail industry. I'm going to really focus on passenger transport because our constituency, if I can put it that way, is again ordinary South Africans and small and medium-sized businesses. We in no way stand for any particular subsector in the transport industry. We don't support any, and we don't oppose any in particular either. We only support good governance, and we oppose corruption and misspending in general. And we've seen those issues in all of these companies. In particular, SANRAL, the project that's really the most relevant besides e-tolls and how the bill will really impact on its tariffs. We've been looking at toll concessionaires, which is a particular shape of public-private partnership. And I should say we really support public-private partnership in general, but both the private parties and the state party must be accountable to the public. That's our view. And until now, we don't believe that that's been the case. And we really would like this bill to change that. So the struggle that we've had with the concessionaires thus far, we've used the PIA avenue to try and obtain information about the details of these agreements between SANRAL and Bakwena and other specific concessionaires. And we haven't managed to get there. So I'm going to appreciate the provision in the bill that speaks to public information and access to information. But just to give some context, this is the problem we faced, a lack of transparency in particular there. Then on SAA, I think it's clear we've took a position of political interference that was inappropriate. We believe that the institution was mismanaged, and the court has ruled in our favor in that instance. So that's confirmed. And we believe that if the bill is implemented properly, in its current form, but with some additions and some technical changes, this can be changed. If there's mismanagement in some of these large SOEs, it wouldn't have such a devastating impact on the fiscus, and it wouldn't be such a significant waste of taxpayers' money. We've seen consistent bailouts for these companies. We're probably going to see one again in a week or two. And this is a problem, Chair. Honorable members, this is something that needs to change. It's something that we can no longer afford as a country, not even close. Transnet, this issue has been discussed. There was obviously some irregularities with the procurement of these locomotives, and this has now become public knowledge. And we hope that this bill is going to really go some way in preventing similar problems in the future. So, of course, it's been a problem that Transnet has had exclusive control of rail infrastructure, and we appreciate that the bill addresses that aspect, that it will actually allow for private investment in rail infrastructure, but that would also need to be regulated. Now, just to say that, again, the impact of the monopoly in the rail industry, from our perspective, is that it enabled individual people and private interests to really rig these procurement processes in favor of private interests as opposed to the public interest. And billions of rands have been lost without the actual delivery of these locomotives that we desperately need. But let me move on to PRASA. There, we haven't seen significant change. But honorable members, I want to refer to the current development that's there, the recommendation that's been made by the Competition Commission to really unbundle the Metro Rail from PRASA, precisely because it has been so unsuccessful in managing the Metro Rail successfully, that these locomotives have been torched and burned in city centers in this country because of how dissatisfied people are with the service that's being delivered there. So I think it's something that needs to be kept in mind, that this function might be delegated to the metros. But we are still engaging with the National Prosecuting Authority to get some accountability for what's happened there over the past 5 to 10 years, because we haven't seen any real consequences for that, and we really hope to. But that's why we care about this bill. Coming to the actual content of the bill, we made some specific comments and recommendations on certain provisions. But I should say again, by and large, we support the bill. And I don't think, honorable members, I want to really request you not to be swayed by private companies that come and present on this bill. We have every right to do so, but who want to really highlight technicalities and problematize this bill purely because it probably won't work out in their interest. That should work out in the interest of the public, and that's how we see the purpose of the bill, which we fully support. That's stated in the memorandum of objects toward the end of the bill, and it says the bill's aim is to achieve technically competent, independent, and adequately resourced regulator to improve economic outcomes, and we think that is essential. We do really support the principle. We support the purpose. We are commenting in the hope that none of these provisions can be exploited. And that would mean that the regulator itself must be accountable, but also that regulated entities should be relatively accessible to the public in terms of information. But I'll get to that point later on. We recommend suitable benchmarks of regulated prices, that they should be published and made known on an annual basis, and that if any circumstances should change those benchmarks, that should be made public as well. In section 4.2, in terms of the application of the Act and what it applies to, we see that the ministerial discretion in consultation with the regulator to apply the bill to any market, entity, or facility in the public or private sectors. We feel that that is a problem because it excludes public consultation, and it excludes consultation with stakeholders that might be affected by the decision to apply the bill to a particular entity or industry. And I think it's something that the previous speaker also raised. I think it's something that must be addressed, and it runs contrary to the Batupele principles and the scope of the values contained in the Constitution. Further, in terms of the application, we think it needs to be clarified. What does it mean, the preconditions for efficiency and cost effectiveness? These are one of the prerequisites that will determine whether a particular entity or industry falls under the scope of this bill, but there's no definition of what that means, and it's quite ambiguous. I think that should be specified to ensure that this doesn't get used arbitrarily or abused. Then sections 11, 1 and 2, the determination of price controls. We agree that this might be necessary, but we only suggest this technical addition that the method for setting the price should be included in items A to D of section 11.2. Then section 11.5, 14.4 and 15. This is very important, honorable members. In our view, this is a key part of the bill where it's talking about accounting and disclosure requirements and complaints. We really support the formalization of the taxi industry, for example, as well as subsidization, that would actually enable its users to lodge complaints if they feel that the service is not satisfactory, or that it actually threatens their well-being, or that they are just economically exploited. It's a good example, but this should apply to all regulated entities. And in terms of accounting and disclosure, again, I think it should be enhanced. The draft provision that's there should be enhanced and really highlighted that there must be significant accountability. Then coming to issuance of compliance notices, if a regulated entity refuses to comply or doesn't respond, We believe that there must be a very good relationship between the regulator and law enforcement agencies. I'd like to just refer to a practical example. I personally use public transport as much as possible. I think it is where we should be going as opposed to private transport. And coming to the Gautrain station in Pretoria, arriving there, having the option of then taking an Uber or taking a bus, the Gautrain bus, or taking a taxi, you would find that there are some serious tensions and threats of violence between some of these companies. So we very much support the principle of competition that the bill is trying to facilitate. But in some instances, the competition can be toxic and can lead to violence. We believe that that should really be checked as well. Again, this can be done by a more clear and explicit relationship between the regulator and law enforcement agencies. Then, in terms of limited price reductions, we don't agree with that, honorable members. There's a provision that says, Section 21.4 in particular, says that there are limits to the power of the regulator in terms of price reduction. We are not sure why that should be the case. I think it is specified to be 10% of the entity's annual turnover. But if it is found by either the regulator's own research or the Competition Commission's research that the tariffs that are there are extremely exploitative, that more than 10% is actually beyond what can be justified economically without exploiting the travelers that use the service, then the reduction should be more significant than 10%. I think that says it clearly. Then chapters 4, 5, and 6, we took a broad stroke in terms of establishment of institutions, enforcement of the Act, and advice and recommendations to the minister. We are quite comfortable with the provisions that are there for the enforcement of the Act. We believe that it is in line with what is to be expected and that there are adequate provisions for implementation. We do believe that there needs to be some checks and balances in terms of ministerial power again and the role of the Department of Transport. It could, as it stands, open the door to corruption as it has in the past, and we think that this is something that must be addressed. In terms of advice and recommendations to the minister, the bill states currently in section 44, I think it is, that the regulator may advise the minister. And we believe that it must. It shouldn't be optional. It should be essential that there is a clear relationship and a healthy relationship between the regulator and the minister that is characterized by transparency and consistent communication. But further, we think that there must be an explicit provision that the minister and or the regulator must report to Parliament to really just close the loop for transparency and public accountability. Again, I think the previous speaker mentioned the next one as well. Section 42.2 spoke to research and public information. And it indicates that anyone who requests that the regulator conducts specific research or an inquiry, that they must then fund the cost of that research and may decline to conduct it if the funding is not provided. We don't think that that is fair. It diminishes the values again of Batupele, Section 195 of the Constitution. It has to be funded otherwise, similarly to the Competition Commission's model. Then, honorable members, I'm running through this just for the interest of time and to enable some discussion if there's interest for that. Just to look at how South Africans actually move, and this may just give the honorable members a good impression of where to look when it comes to the application of this bill to passenger travel or transport. In the main, most people use public transport, and this is a finding by StatsFA. A survey that was done between 2003 and 2013, this may have changed in the meantime, but I think it's quite safe to say that many people rely on public transport. In particular, the bulk of those by far rely on the taxi industry. And this industry should be something that really is clearly accounted for in how this bill is going to apply. The impact that the bill will have on this industry, we think, should be very carefully considered. The minority of people use private transport. But again, we want to understand what the impact is going to be. but also how will SANRAL be regulated? I'll come to in the next slide the proportion of public spending on specific entities in the transport industry, which is where our mandate falls, which should also give some indication of where the honourable member should focus cities in the application of this bill. And we want to understand how will SANRAL regulate, be regulated outside the prescripts of the SANRAL Act. I think it was Uber in a previous presentation who problematized the concurrent jurisdiction of that act and this one and others. But again, we note that this bill states that it would basically be superior to any bill that it contradicts. And if that may be a problem in practice, that should be ironed out. But we don't think that it should be problematized to too much of an extent. So lastly, before I get to the conclusion, these are the biggest spenders involved in transport in terms of entities. SANRAL being by far the largest. And considering ETOLs, I'm not sure, Chairperson, how this bill is going to have an impact on that system, which by now I think there's consensus that it doesn't work, but that this entity's financial model must be reconsidered in that light, that it hasn't worked, that it has been completely dependent on road users in Gauteng to finance its deficits. Its deficits continue and the debt continues to grow. Now, as we can see, it's in terms of the color code, it's primarily road. And I think this was also discussed earlier, that gets funded publicly, where rail, air, and other mediums of transport are relatively unimportant. So I think it's important to look at how this bill is going to impact on the road transport sector. Finally, Chairperson, let me just summarize by saying we welcome the bill in principle, and we think that some provisions must be made even stronger. And we don't want this bill to be watered down as a result of private sector players who come and say that it's a problem, that these regulations and these technicalities should be the focus of your deliberations. We want this bill to be implemented, and we believe it can work for South Africans. We also think the regulator, who will have significant powers, should consist of experienced experts from a variety of subsectors in the transport sector, and that its leadership should not be politically appointed, that there should be some sort of an open appointment process. For example, the heads of Chapter 9 institutions are increasingly becoming open to public participation in Parliament's process of who gets appointed there. That's something to consider. But we think that this will assist the regulator to make independent decisions, that it wouldn't be beholden to any political interests, that it can really do its work in the interests of the public. And the transport sector has been wrought with massive corruption. We know this by now, and this is a result of capital intensive public procurement. And we also look forward to the draft public procurement bill reaching Parliament and becoming enacted. And we think that this should also work in tandem with how the regulator operates. Both PRASA and Transnet have been problems, and there's been examples of this issue, I repeat. And finally, Chair and Honourable Members, we will follow up this submission and presentation, which should be considered introductory in the NCOP, depending on how the process unfolds with this committee. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Matt, from the detailed presentation. And we are glad to hear that we have given you sufficient time to talk to us. Let me now allow members to ask questions for clarity. First one is Honorable Mang, Honorable Chris Hansinger, Honorable Lawrence McDonald, Mondise Ketamabala, you'll be number four. And Honorable May, are you there? I must take care of you. Are you fine? Are you not raising your hand?
Unmute yourself. Let me hear. You're fine. Okay. Jambas. Mazogewa.
Siyabonga, siyabonga sihlalo. Good morning, colleagues, again. Those I missed to greet. My best friend, Honorable Hunsinger, good morning. Thank you so much, Mr. Johnston, for your presentation. I really don't have much questions because I think, as you rightfully said, in your recommendations and everything, we will, as a committee, obviously be able, having looked at everything that is coming to us, balanced to the best of our ability, in line with our expectation or responsibility. Now, the first one I have is really to pick your mind, particularly given your role and the way you have positioned yourself as outer. You have positioned yourself like an organization that is representing the interests of the public. I'm not here to judge whether that is so or not, but that is the perception that is out there. What is your view pertaining to the way that committee stroke parliament has published or has opened up this process to allow members of the public in the broadest terms to be able to voice their views? I am asking this again to pick your mind and your opinion, if you may, purely because if I look at the spread of the people we are receiving, with the exception of you and I think and a couple of individuals, we have had very little, even if I look at who we are still going to see, of people who are users of public transport broadly, number one. Number two, in the case of our e-hailing services providers, and I made this comment on that day, maybe you were there, there was very little to those that are their partners being the drivers in this instance. And I want to hear what your view is. That was the first one. The second one was you mentioned something, I just missed your slide number there, about public information and access to information that you wish it could be as transparent as possible. I couldn't get exactly your point there. If you recall what you said, I hope I'm reminding you quite well. I would be very appreciative if you could just expand on the point you are driving there. One other comment is obviously the issue of the competition ruling you mentioned about the unbundling of processes. Again, if you could just give a little bit of information there. I also thought you went a bit too light on that point. The rest indeed, I will be able to engage when we engage as a committee, where you are specific in terms of sections and what you think is a weakness. What should be strengthened and so forth and so forth. And lastly, once more, a big thank you for your elaborate presentation. Thank you, Chairperson.
Asibonge, Jabaz. Asibonge, nokwehlisa isandla ngesikhathi mfowethu. Siyafunda, siyaphambili. Masimthole ke ubaba uChris Hunsinger.
Ngozi kakhulu, Chairperson. Thank you, Mr. Johnson, for your presentation and submissions and for taking effort and time to really work through what is on the table currently. Also for your civic activity as an organization, OTA, for your efforts towards improved governance, effectiveness, efficiency, but in particular for guarding over tax contributions, our budgets are applied, and this then to the benefit of users and public beneficiaries. In particular, then, your submission on this bill, given the fact that this bill would in status be superior to any act it might contradict, and also to improve transparency and accountability mechanisms, the normal structure of what we currently see around SOEs, also reflecting on the four SOEs that you pointed out in, we have a board and we have parliamentary oversight as part of the accountability and transparency mechanisms. Would you suggest a different structure, given this particular character and nature, which this economic regulation of transport bill then might evolve into, so that we might consider and apply a different structure or an improved structure of transparency and accountability over and above what we normally see in SOEs, over and above the boards and directors and executive and then parliamentary oversight mechanisms. Have you applied your mind around how different in structure this particular economic regulator might be? Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Enkosi kakhulu, Baba. Enkosi kakhulu. That Lawrence McDonald, Bagaksa Amre.
Quotes on that. I would also like to thank the presentation from Mr. Johnston. Mr. Johnston made a comment that the Metro Rail, that there was carriages burned by Metro Rail by commuters that were unhappy. I think that was a very bold statement, Mr. Johnston, because you are excluding the fact that there's a lot of people that want the trains not to function and for their own profit, and that these burning of trains could be just criminality and the burning of state infrastructure for their own pockets. And then I would like to ask you a question regarding SANRAL. How does IALTA see South Africans paying for the GFIB? Should SANRAL, the e-tolls be cancelled, and how are we going to fund it? I just want to pick your brain on that. Thank you very much, Jefferson.
Give that. Mondays, job, Kamaja.
Mangat.
Nago, Geva.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much, Chairperson. And then thank you to the presenter from Johnson. But, Chairperson, first of all, I want to thank you, Johnson, because they do support the peace. Yes, we have to appreciate that they do support the peace. There's only one thing that I want to find out. At the onset, at their statement, they say IALTA agrees with the section that the liquidator will oversee price control. This will force the service provider to take care of their consumer. The bill imposes limit on the powers of the liquidator in terms of price reduction to not to exceed more than 10%. But at the same time, what I want to find out from them now, at the same time they say it is not clear why the reduction should be limited to 10%. I'm trying to check what is their thinking if the limit is not 10%. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
I have exhausted my list, which was very short.
Chairperson, me as well. Goodbye.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, sir. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Thanks, Mr. Johnston, for the good work you are doing. Your view is that Metro Rail must be delegated to Metro. I support this idea, but what is the main reasons why you as an organization support this idea?
I know you to be short. So don't mistake me if I think you are true.
Am I correct? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Those were the hands that I've noticed. I'm sure I'm not leaving any hand out. Let me at this point in time go back to Mr. Matt Johnson to respond where he thinks he can be able to respond. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you very much for the questions. I think they're very constructive. With regards to public participation and whether we are happy with the model currently in Parliament, Honourable Member, I should say in summary, no, we are not. And we are actually busy with separate projects from this bill, trying to improve that and really engage with Parliament about its public participation model. We do think that more can be done in that regard. We are looking at Parliament's budget and how that is spent, and comparing funding to constituency offices, which the Joint Standing Committee on the Financial Management of Parliament has found to be largely dysfunctional and somewhat unaccountable. We believe that some of the funds that Parliament is appropriated from National Treasury each year could be spent better to include the enhancement of public participation tools and the communication of those opportunities. I mean, we have been actively focused on Parliament and really looking constantly at these kinds of opportunities. Sometimes we've missed them, even though we look for them every day, because often these kinds of opportunities are published in a small corner of a local newspaper or a national newspaper that the vast majority of people simply don't read. And we do appreciate that some committees do host these kinds of engagements, but further to the accessibility and the knowledge of the general public of how these things work and how they can participate. The question is also if they had the opportunity and if, as the Honourable Member mentioned, if some more actual public transport users came and presented here, how would their views be processed? Would it actually result in a measurable impact on the final product of this bill? And that is uncertain. As far as the finance committees goes, there has been little to no impact, and it is extremely frustrating. We see that reports are ultimately generated as a result of these processes, but it's not clear what the impact of those reports will be. And finally, I mean, at the end of those reports, there's a small section on recommendations when it comes to, for example, the appropriations bill, which is a major bill determining how all money is spent in the public sector. There is a recommendation for adoption without amendment. And that means that nothing that was said actually changed what is going to happen. So I should say that we would be happy to see Parliament investing in the development of its public participation model and to really give people the sense that if they made the effort to come and present to Parliament or to send any kind of submission, that it would have an impact. I think more people would be willing to do so if they knew how to do that. Then on public information, I would like to specify, thank you. Our concern is that the regulator would have the power to demand any information from regulated entities, but the public would not. And there is also a provision on confidential information, which implies that some of the information, for example, third-party information, as we face the issue with concessionaires and their relationship with Sunrail, they refuse to share and make public the details of their financial relationship. And that is a problem. That is, to us, the contradiction of transparency and accountability. And we've had to go to court to try and obtain that information. And we believe that this bill can assist the public to get that kind of information through the regulator. But as it stands, that is not provided for. The regulator has the power to reject any request for information to be made public or to completely ignore it, which is what we found quite often. Then on the unbundling of PRASA, I think I should say that it is indicative of the same problem that's led to this bill, and that is the stranglehold of the passenger rail industry by PRASA. And I think it's not a matter of principle that that's a problem, a centralized system. But if this entity that controls all passenger rail were managed well, and if there was not corruption, if there was not maladministration, it would not be a problem. But I think in relation to the bill, I just raise this to say that honorable members should consider this change in the landscape and how this bill might interact with that change. I'm not sure. I think it's quite a complicated question. Mr. Hunsinger, you mentioned accountability structures and mechanisms, and thank you. That's a very useful question. Absolutely, we've been applying our minds to that. The Dalai Omar Institute, for example, has basically hosted several seminars and engagements with civil society, suggesting an overarching SOE Act that would the way that boards are appointed, for example, that would basically change how the public stakeholder is represented at that level. At the moment, obviously, it's almost purely ministerial representation. And for example, the Minister of Water and Sanitation is the sole custodian. And so a vast amount of responsibility stops there. And we've seen the problems resulting from that. We've seen the problems in the transport sector in particular, where ministerial discretion to sign off on procurement processes of billions of rands are exploited, that power is abused. And that is exactly what we hope this bill will alleviate. But I should mention, besides their proposal, Dalai Omar Institute's proposal for an overarching SOE Act, it is basically synonymous with the Government Shareholder Management Bill, which was mentioned in the public discourse some years ago, that was supposed to emanate from the Department of Public Enterprises, and it never has. And we've been talking about this, but we don't see that bill being forthcoming. Honorable MacDonald, thank you. I appreciate the point, and I think it's true. It relates to my point that when it comes to competition, which in general is considered to be healthy economically, there's often violent competition. And of course, the culprits behind the vandalization of rail infrastructure and carriages specifically could very well be the competitors of that industry. And that is why I say I think it's very important. I think there is some provision, and the bill does allude to a relationship between the regulator and law enforcement agencies. For example, when it comes to compliance notices, that the law enforcement agency would make sure that there is compliance and that they would actually bring about consequences if there is not. That should be extended to these sorts of issues where there is intimidation between industries and violent competition. We don't think that is healthy, and ultimately it is the users of public transport who suffer as a result of that. You also asked about the GFIP and how South Africans should pay for that. I think we have made some positions quite public on that in recent years, and I wouldn't be the authority to answer that question. My CEO would. But the basic answer would be that we are already paying for it in the form of taxation. And the GFIP has really accrued so much debt over the past 10 years that it is inevitably now the fiscus who is going to carry that cost. Whether it comes from the fuel levy or something else, it is the general fiscus that will pay for that, because road users simply refuse to pay e-tolls. And I should say that if that acknowledgement was there 10 years ago, or when the GFIP was actually constructed and completed, then the debt wouldn't have accrued in the meantime, and the actual burden on the fiscus would have been lighter. Chairperson, if I can request that the last two honorable members can just repeat their questions. My connection was very poor. Please.
You are granted that permission, Matt.
Thank you.
Honorable May and Honorable Ketamaba.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the good work you are doing, Mr. Johnston. I would like to ask only one question. Your view is that Metro Rail must be delegated to Metros. I support this idea, but what is the main reason why you as an organization support it?
Right. Mondiza?
Hello?
Yes, I can hear you. Mondiza?
Yes, I was trying to check because they say they are not happy about that 10%. So I'm trying to check from them what will be their input or their intake on the 10%. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Matt? Thank you.
Thank you. First, I'll speak to the 10% reduction limit. Our recommendation is basically that should not be the limit, but the limit should be higher, and that the extent to which prices can be controlled and tariffs can be reduced should be contextual, and that it should not be limited to 10% of the regulated entity's annual turnover. And the reason I say that is because if a certain entity really has the absolute monopoly in a particular sub-sector, then they could really charge what they want. And it could be far beyond 10% that would be reasonable and justifiable for the public to pay less than what that company would prefer to ask. And that would, again, require, and it would be very useful if the public could see, but what is this actual company's turnover? What is their level of profit? If we understand that, then it would be easy to say, but perhaps 20% or 30% reduction in their tariffs would be appropriate, because look at the margin of their profit. They're basically exploiting people. So that's our recommendation there. And then when it comes to the Metro Rail, I wouldn't say that we have an organizational position, that it should be unbundled. We don't. I merely make the observation to say that this is something that the Competition Commission has recommended and that it might very well happen as a result of their recommendation. And I wouldn't say off the top of my head that we take an organizational stance of support on that, because we have seen that metros themselves, like the city of Johannesburg, are not purely or perfectly accountable either, far from it. So if the Metro Rail function should be shifted to them, how much better would the management be? If there were certain guarantees in place of how that would be better than the way PRASA has managed things to date, we might take a more straightforward organizational position on it. But safe to say that considering how PRASA has been operating, considering the serious allegations of mismanagement, for example, that are coming from the Zondo Commission now in that entity, it might be a good idea to take away this very important public transport function from them. But thanks again, Chairperson and Honorable Members, for your time. We appreciate the opportunity.
No, thanks, Matt. Thanks to you and your organization for having taken time out of your busy schedule and once more becoming part of the constructive process. I've heard that you will keep an eye and continue to participate so that we together can actually shape the way we want our transport sector to be run, be regulated, and so forth. Thank you very much. We appreciate your time and that of your organization. Thank you. Will I be right to say we should be allowing, if they are already here, the regulating committee for airports company and air traffic and navigation services company. Are they here?
Yes, Chair, we are here. Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Kinosi Selani. Can you hear me?
Lega emme.
Ereten lega ntate.
Ah, how so sinye ka nnete.
E ke a leboga.
Rofa marapo le tsohle tso di tlokang o duba dubana le taba ena o itlisitseng ka pela runa mona.
Ke a leboga ntate.
Re lebohile.
Thank you, Chair, members, and everybody who's on the panel. My name is Kinosi Selani. I'm the chairperson of the Regulating Committee for AXA and AT&S. We've provided our inputs based on the STAR bill that is in front of you. Basically, when we went through the bill, we are highlighting quite a few elements that may affect the aviation sector adversely. Can I start with the first two major points? In the revised bill, which is the STAR bill, transport bill, economic regulation of transport bill, we are recommending that the bill should delete certain sections of the AXA and the AT&S Act, which are section 5.2 subsection E and F. To us as the regulating committee who are charged with economic regulation of AXA and AT&S, we are requesting that perhaps you put a hold, a time limit to this, to say allow the STAR bill another 5 years before you can delete section 5, subsection 2, subsection E and F, and section 11 and section 12, subsection 2 to 12, and section 14, subsections 2 to 4. Because these subsections, the first one, which is section 5, subsection 2, relates to that number of times that the tariffs can be amended. If you delete this section, it means that the companies can request tariff adjustments more than twice in a financial year, which may have an adverse impact on the users of the aviation sector. Section 11 and section 12 subsection 12. This is the process on how we review the tariff. Basically, under this section is where we request the companies to provide us with financial information and any other information that we as the key parties may require. So by taking out that subsection, it means we are rendering the team that is charged with economic regulation incapable of requesting information from the regulated entities. So we request that these sections be kept. Section 14 and section 13, they also have the impact of how we regulate these entities. So we are requesting for section 5, subsection 2, from letter E to F be kept. Subsection 11 and section 12 and section 14 be kept for AXA Act, so that it allows for a smooth transition from the current act to the next act. That's number one. Number two, for the air traffic navigation section services, also section 5.2 from subsection E to F, section 11, subsection 2 to 12, and section 13, subsection 2 to 4. We also request that these be kept because they allow for the smooth transition. In the current economic regulation transport bill, for aviation sector, we don't indicate the period of validity of the tariff. Currently in the AXA and the AT&S Act, we say that the tariff is valid for 5 years. However, in the proposed bill, we don't state the required timelines. So this creates a bit of an anomaly. Does it mean that every year the tariffs will be adjusted or every 2 years? We don't know. So we request that this bill addresses that to say what is the envisaged duration of the proposed tariff. Another issue is that the bill, the current bill, the Transport Economic Regulation Bill, does not speak to the issue of consultation with stakeholders, whether they approve or disapprove price deviation, whether they approve or disapprove the capital expenditures of the regulated entity. This is key because what happens is that the two entities, which is AXA and AT&S, when they go out on capital expenditure, some of the capital expenditure is huge. It runs into billions and billions of rands. So if there's no consultation and the users don't state that actually we need you to change this runway or we need you to change this infrastructure, it becomes problematic because it means that these expenses are incurred without consultation with the users. The users may come back and tell the regulated entities to say, no, actually, we don't want that. And the regulated entity would have incurred those expenses. So we request that consultation with users be key. The current act that we use, the current legislation that we use, which is the AXA and the AT&S legislation, they allow for consultation. And even us as the regulator, we also encourage and have allowed a stream where the Airlines Association, which is the local Airlines Association and the International Airline Association, to participate in the consultation so that we have a better view. We don't have a single view from the regulated entities to say we want capex of 5 billion. The users, which is the airlines and the passengers, can come in and say, instead of a 5 billion capex, perhaps we can face the 5 billion over 5 years or over 10 years, and it becomes a smoother transition into the capex, infrastructure capex rollout. Another issue that we wanted to highlight is that in the Economic Regulation Transport Bill, under Section 11, Subsection 9C, and 11, Subsection 10, we talk about price deviation from price control, but then the legislation does not indicate the conditions or the criteria for deviations to be permitted. Because if you are saying you want to deviate, you have to highlight the conditions and the criteria that will permit the deviation so that all parties are on the same page. Because if we are just silent on the matter of price deviation, we'll have deviations because management are running their businesses, the regulated entities are running their business inefficiently. And when they come to the regulator, they'll not say that we are running our business inefficiently. They'll come up with strange terms and conditions. So we kindly request that conditions and criteria of deviations be highlighted and be clearly stated on the document so that this can assist when you are actually doing the work. And another issue is that we are saying under the proposed Economic Regulation of Transport Bill, Section 11, Subsection 5, that if the proposal for price control approval relates to the services that is subsidized, the regulator must consult with the party that is providing a subsidy in a prescribed manner. And Section 11, Subsection 6, also requires the regulator to consider any request of the subsidizing party. However, it is not clear to us as the committee, the current regulator, whether these clauses include the aviation industry or not. Because one, as the aviation industry, we are not getting any subsidy from a government or any other person. So if we are including subsidies, where will these subsidies come from? Are they subsidies from industry or is government prepared to subsidize airlines and passengers who are the main users of this and the airports and the air traffic navigation system? So we are not very clear about these matters and we kindly request that the portfolio committee should take our request into consideration to say, these are the issues that we think initially may hamper the smooth transition of the current system to the new system. Because if we are not very clear, one, the duration, currently we have a 5-year term. If we don't state that the permission period is going to be 5 years, then it means every year it has to be a new permission application. And because of the aviation industry, it becomes very cumbersome because for us to study, even if it's 5 years, the preparatory work for the permission application process is 12 months. So it has an unintended consequence to say not everybody will be in a position to apply for a tariff every year. So these are the matters that we are highlighting to the portfolio committee. And I think I can stop right now to allow for members and anyone who may have questions.
You seem to be very ready.
No. No, I'm even scared.
Okay, no, it's okay. Let me allow members then to do exactly what we have requested them to do. Honorable Manu, you'll be the first. Let me see the next hand. Seemingly for now there's only one hand. You said make notes, I guess. Oh yeah. Honorable Ansinga will follow, and then we'll have Honorable McDonald and Honorable Ketamabal. In that order, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Mayor Kinosi, for your presentation, which we highly welcome and appreciate. A bit disappointed, obviously, because it would appear to me, at least, that most of your comments are more complaining, you know. You know, it's always difficult. Also, difficult to follow your presentation because I was trying to follow your submission in terms of your presentation and I was not sure where you were on different areas. However, let me try and zoom in. You speak about, I think it was the last one, where you talk about Section 11.5. You said the purposes of price control and so forth and so forth. Now, your comment there is that it is, however, not clear to the committee whether these clauses include the aviation industry or not. It suggests that you are anticipating or you are propagating that this TER bill should exclude the aviation industry or certain clauses thereof. And I don't know if my understanding is right. Maybe you can explain as to why you think this should exclude the aviation industry. You then went on to speak about consultation in particular, which I think you were suggesting that is not very, very clear. I was trying to find in your submission again, where exactly were you talking about this? Where you're talking about the consultation, I might have missed it because I was trying to follow your presentation as you were speaking. However, you make the examples of consultation as it relates to procurement in relation to capital projects, which I find it a bit very strange as to how that could be raised in the context of this bill in front of us. Because any consultation, if any, which relates to procurement is, in my view, regulated or managed in terms of total different regime of pieces of legislation. So maybe you could explain exactly how you relate procurement. You made an example of a runway and billions of rand of capital expenditure. If you could bring that relation to this bill in front of us, how do you see it relating to it? Because again, as I've explained my comments as it relates to that, those will be my two comments, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Jamba.
Chairperson, can I respond?
No, don't respond. Write down. You'll respond after they all have asked their questions, Maggie Nosey.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much, Madam Selane, for taking time to working through what we have on the table up until this stage and for contributing in the development of this future envisaged economic regulation of transport bill. You made it very difficult for us in referring to sections with subsections without anything on a screen. Every submission so far has had PowerPoint, which makes it easy for us to refer and to reference. You can just imagine what our tables and desks and work surfaces look like at this stage. I would really recommend your consideration in the future, if you deal with things like this, to rather have a PowerPoint presentation to just assist the communication process. So I would have loved to engage a lot more, but you made it a bit difficult for us in just referring to different section numbers and even subsection numbers. So that it's rather difficult for us. My colleague Honorable Mangu has covered me on some of the questions. The ones that he hasn't touched on, I will then focus on. Now, as the regulating committee of ACSA and AT&S, you're responsible for aeronautical charges with regards to landing fees, passenger service charges, and also aircraft parking fees, and this in a five-year cycle, as you also referred to. But purposes of continuation, but also then planning of these participating companies, there's a two-year overlap period, which is very useful and which is a very, very good transition mechanism planning for both and actually all stakeholders involved. But I do pick up that there might be in a envisaged future existence of your function and the economic regulator's function a conflict of interest. So could you, in very simple terms, expand on your fears? Because the underlying message between the line is one of which messages fear and threat. Could you then, therefore, in very simple terms, express and share with us those fears so that we have a thorough impression of a possible conflict of interest? And then secondly, in being this regulatory committee that establishes these aeronautical charges, how do you go about in your consultation process? In considering, I know that you make use of a particular model and that the model is known and that you do take economic and financial factors in account, CPI and et cetera, but what does your consultation process involve and what stakeholders do you include in your determination and planning of future charges in the aeronautical space? Furthermore, how do you handle objections and appeals, and in what way would you find a role of a future regulator assisting in this total approach where there might be a space for both the regulatory committee and also the regulator? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Hunsinger. Thank you very much for doing that. Honorable McDonald.
Thank you, Chair. I welcome the presentation of Mayor Selane. My comments are regarding Section 5, Subsection 2, E and F, on the number of tariff increases. I welcome your input on that. I understand that the aviation industry will be severely distressed due to COVID in the foreseeable future, most probably for the next 10 to 20 years before it will be stabilized again. And we will definitely, myself, I will definitely look into that subsection. I also, into subsection 11, section 11, subsection 9C of the deviation, and I agree with you that in the aviation industry, deviations without consulting major players like the international airlines regarding landing fees, parking fees, navigation fees, and all those technical things that are actually determined on a very long-term basis, I think on five-year basis, is that certain deviations will cause a huge decline in passenger numbers to South Africa, and that which will then affect, adversely affect our fiscus in that way. So if you can maybe assist us and say, maybe give us some ideas on how you would like to see those changes. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Baba Keta Mabara.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I have been covered by Honorable Mang.
Thank you very much. Buramadwa.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I also want to join my colleagues who are welcoming the presentation. But through you, Chairperson, I would also like to request the presenter to repeat what she said when she said there is a section that must not be deleted because it's a call to the ERT bill. And why is she saying that? I can't remember the section, but that's why I wanted her to repeat what she said. Through you, Chairperson, thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ramadwa. Is your pen and paper ready now?
Yes, Chair, I'm ready. Can I start? Chair and members, apologies. This is my first time at the Portfolio Committee, so I was not very aware of how things run. It's ignorance from my part. Please, I profusely apologize for making the members and the Chair lost in the process of my explanation. The intention was not to do things that way. I'll start with the matter on consultation. The issue of consultation, Chair, it becomes key for us to say what happens is that you have the regulated entities, which is AXA and ATNS, and you have your users, which is the airlines and the passengers. When we talk about the consultation and the procurement, what happens is that because the current permission is for 5 years, the airlines, which is the regulated entities, which is AXA and ATNS, will tell the airlines and the regulator to say, in the next 5 years, we think we'll need capex of 10 billion. They will highlight to say, in that 10 billion, we need to amend the runway, we need to amend the infrastructure, the parking bays, we need to amend the building inside, whatever they need to amend. And having highlighted the 10 billion infrastructure, they need to consult with the users, which are the airlines and the passengers. With the airlines, they will highlight all the key CapEx projects for that make up the 10 billion. And with that, they will sit down and consult to say, as the users, as the airlines, do we need a new runway, yes or no? Or this runway can be refurbished for another 5 years. They agree on that. If they agree, perfect, the runway falls off from the capex of AXA. When it falls off, it means it's no longer required in the next 5 years.
hence the request for consultation. So the users, which is the airline associations, they are not involved in the procurement. The SCM processes of ACCS and ATNS is done at ACCS and ATNS. And as the regulator, the regulating committee, the airlines, the passengers, we don't get involved in that procurement. Once we agree in principle to say, in the next 5 years, these infrastructure projects will be agreed upon and will be rolled out, that's where the buck stops. The two entities, which is ACCS and ATNS, they go back and comply with PFMA, Companies Act, King, their treasury regulations, everything. Regulator, airlines association, you don't get involved in the procurement. Once you agree in principle that we will need, we envisage that traffic movement will increase by 3%, which means that the airline, there'll be need for more security gates, there'll be need for more parking base, there'll be need for a bigger runway. Once we agree in principle, the two regulated entities say bye-bye and they go and implement. We don't get involved in the procurement. So what happens in the procurement? ACCSA and ATNS have to comply with PFMA, treasury regulations, Companies Act, every other legislation. Regulator, you are not involved. And airlines, you are not involved. Passengers, you are not involved. You are not called upon. And the issue, another issue that we want to highlight, we are not complaining. We are saying, yes, we have the step bill as it stands. However, we think as the regulator, looking at how things are done, because we have the experience that how things are done, we can assist the portfolio committee to say, we don't allow legislation to be promulgated, which may impede on the rollout. So we are requesting that perhaps you reconsider. It's not complaining. It's just to say, can we enhance and make sure that when we have an act of legislation, generations to come don't say, oh, the previous people failed us. That's the whole idea. We're not trying to find faults. The issue of conflict of interest and fear, there's no conflict of interest in my view as a regulating committee. We have a fixed term to say every 3 years you are appointed. Within the third year of our term of office, we have the option to reapply. And if you are successful, you are taken over. If you are not successful, you fall out. So if the step bill comes and step bill comes with its terms and conditions and we lose on the term of office, that's the name of the game. No one is going to fight over. I was expecting, no one expects anyway to be rolled over to the new entity. That will be based on merit and people applying. That's number one. The fear, it's not a fear. We are just appraising the portfolio committee to say, as the incumbent who's charged with economic regulation for the aviation sector, for ACCS and ATNS, and as we have done different permission in the past, these are the issues that we think you as parliamentarians need to be mindful of. On a day-to-day basis, when we conduct the work that we do, these are the things that we are finding may impede this bill that we are proposing. We see it as a holistic bill. However, there are certain elements of aviation that we are of the view that are not addressed adequately, hence the letter that we are providing. So there is no conflict of interest. There is no fear. It's just to appraise the portfolio committee to say, these are the issues that we think may have an adverse impact on the rollout of the bill. And I think it's prudent for us as the incumbent to say, portfolio committee and legislature and the people tasked with this, be mindful of the following factors, not that we are seeing anything. On a consultation, the consultation is a long consultation because one, we have your airlines, both local and international. Currently, we don't have passengers as in users. We have tried to team up with tourism, tried to go to different parties to say, how do we get the general public involved? Because they are also involved. In terms of public participation, we are working on that we gazette the draft permission for consultation for whoever is aware. They can provide everything inputs, and then we assess whatever inputs that we have. And in terms of going to different provinces, that we have never done as an entity, but then that's something that we are working on in conjunction with the Department of Transport, because currently we are not a standalone entity. We are sitting within the Department of Transport. So once they have scheduled or set up the structure for us to be able to go to the 9 provinces of the country and roll out this process, then it will be easier. In terms of consultation, we have consultation of traffic focus to say the 2 entities have to tell us their traffic focus for the next 5 years. We have consultation on that. The return that they expect us to get, we have consultation on that, which is the weighted average capital. The CPI, which is inflation that they're going to use, we have consultation on that. The business model, and which includes the OPEX, CAPEX, and any other costs, we have consultations on that. And any other consultations that the airlines have issues on, which we need to be appraised of. If they don't agree on capital expenditure, we have consultations on that. And on financial performance, how the entities are performing on a quarterly basis, we have consultations on that. We have consultations on service standard to say, are the airports clean? Are the airports conducive for the users? Are the airport users, are they getting value for money? We have consultations on that. So the consultations are long and not onerous, but then they're long, they're many. And we try to incorporate that. On the issue of objections, yes, we have objections where if the general public has complaints, they can come to us. If the 2 regulated entities have complaints, they can come to us. And we interact with that on the basis that they have objections. On the issue of tariff increases, we do have a major issue to say, if we have more than 2 tariff increases, that is a lot. And we need to understand the reasons for those tariff increases. We cannot allow the 2 regulated entities, which are monopolies, to have tariff increases as and when they feel, number one, encourage inefficiencies within the entity themselves. So we just need to understand the reasons why they would require more tariff increases. Because of COVID, we need to be mindful that COVID has affected everybody. When I mean everybody, all the LSMs from 1 to whatever the highest level. So if we are going to say the 2 regulated entities, their tariffs must increase by 50%. It means the end consumer, the middle class lady and gentleman, have to increase their charges. They have to increase the amount of funds to travel both locally and internationally. So we need to balance that, find some form of balance to say, how do we ensure that the regulated entities are profitable? Over and above being profitable, the users are not disadvantaged that they have to pay excessive amount unnecessarily. So that's the balance that we all need to manage. In terms of deviations, currently in the conditions, we don't have any deviations to price controls. Hence, we are asking to say, if you are proposing price deviation, perhaps it would be ideal for you to come up with conditions and criteria where deviations will be permitted. We have acts of God, but then that we've never, it's on capital expenditure, but not on everything. So these things we are seeing on the bill, but then we're saying perhaps when the drafters of the bill came up with this bill, what were they thinking? Because when we were engaging with them, these conditions were not included for the aviation sector. So perhaps they're included for other modes of transportation, not necessarily aviation. And how can we marry those to aviation? Because remember, within transport, I think we have more than three modes of transportation. So it becomes tricky when we want to generalize to say transport, but then we know within aviation that certain things we don't do. So hence we are requesting that. they need to repeat the section. It's subsection 5. On the letter for the portfolio committee, I think there's a letter comments from the regulating committee. It's on page 2 where it says Schedule 1 amendment of consequential amendments of the section of the Airports Company number 44 and of 1993, and page 3 of the letter, which is amendments of Air Traffic Navigation Company Act 45 of 1993. The section are listed. I can read them out again. For AXA, it's section 5, subsection 2, E to F, section 11, section 12, subsection 2 to 12, section 14, subsection 2 to 4. For AT&S, it's section 5, subsection 2, E to F, section 11, subsection 2 to 12, and section 13, subsection 2 to 4. I think I've answered the first draft of questions, Chairperson. I'm not sure if we have additional.
Magnosi Selane, thank you very much for doing your job. I'm sure you have given your best. We are cognizant of the fact that this may be your first time, but you shared information that has helped us. Chief focus, as we meander with this bill, don't get lost. What we have gathered from you today, we will go and look at it as we are busy dealing with this act. We want to thank you for making time on behalf of your organization to come and brief us, and so that together we can then move forward. We have heard the concerns as you were putting them, the tariffs and so forth. We will look at them as we move on. Otherwise, we want to take this opportunity and say, can need to itikile mme. Rukwile mwanezu. Leru narbaatu. Kalebuwa.
Thank you, Chair and members. Thank you very much for the time afforded to me.
Thank you very much. We will weekend them not in milk.
Bye. Thank you.
Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on Transport, I know that you may want to assist me in dealing with the program. We are left with one submission, and I was requesting for your patience that we deal with this submission, so that when some of us go around one, at least we are done. I'm sure you'll agree with me.
Supported, Chair.
Is that supported?
Supported, Chair.
Thank you very much. Let me just check the presence of South African Association of Ship Operators and Agents.
Mr. Chairman, present.
Are you Mr. Norton?
Yes, that's correct, Mr. Chairman.
You see, I know you.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you very much. The platform is yours. You can submit. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much indeed. First, just to introduce SASOA. It's the South African Association of Ships Agents and Ship Operators and Agents. what the members of SOSOA are, any shipping lines that call into South Africa, any ships that call into South Africa require a local agent, and any shipping lines that regularly call here on a line of service, these are all members of the South African Association of Ships Operators and Agents. So that's just a brief introduction to the membership. Quite obviously, this bill is of crucial importance to our members, and our members support it. We support it in the sense that the logistics chain in South Africa, we believe, has some bottlenecks. Before I go any further, Mr. Besnard, Peter Besnard, has just put his video on. I'd just like to introduce him. He's the Chief Executive Officer of SOSOA, and I'm Tony Norton. I'm presenting on behalf of SOSOA. So the submission is short. It's to indicate the fact that our members are supportive. Just to give you a little bit of background from our perspective, there's already a regulator for the National Ports Authority, but there's no regulation in respect of Transnet port terminals or Transnet freight rail. And if you're looking at monopolies in the logistics chain, these three are we believe the biggest monopolies in the chain, and therefore require regulation and can't be effectively regulated by the Competition Commission. So from that perspective, that's the reason why we support this bill. We are not too sure what Section 4.1 of the bill is meant to achieve. It's not clear to us, and we wonder whether that could be clarified during the course of your deliberations. It may mean, we think, that any party in the transport sector that is currently regulated via the Minister of Transport, for example, Transnet National Ports Authorities, is currently regulated by the Ports Regulator, which is appointed by the Minister of Transport. If the section is meant to achieve an automatic regulation by the new regulator, then we support that. But it's not clear to us whether that's the case or not, and we'd appreciate that being clarified. As far as the shipping sector is concerned, there is another entity that we believe should also fall within the remit of the new regulator, and that should be the South African Maritime Safety Authority, which passes levies in the maritime and transport sector, and therefore has an impact on ultimate pricings to customers, and therefore we believe ought to be examined by the regulator as well. Our members feel less supportive of the idea that private sector institutions should also fall within the remit of the regulator, only from the perspective that we believe that the Competition Commission currently adequately deals with that. In other words, what we see the value in this bill as being the fact that there are certain state-sanctioned monopolies that currently operate and require regulation, and are not able to be regulated adequately by the Competition Commission, whilst private interests who may fall foul of the of competition issues can adequately be dealt with by the Competition Commission. But we fully accept that if the portfolio committee Mr. Chair, comes to the conclusion that what's good for the goose is also good for the gander, then certainly we're prepared to, our members are prepared to live with regulation by the sports regulator across the ambit of the transport sector, which from our perspective mainly deals, from our members' perspective, mainly deals with shipping, ports, rail, and road. There is one anomaly we think that's quite important to deal with, and that's in the definition of facility. Facility is defined as any physical infrastructure used for the transportation of persons or goods. Now, we assume that the intention is to cover not just transport in this bill, but all aspects of the logistics chain. In other words, the transport logistics chain. So that it would also cover warehousing, terminals, depots, container depots, et cetera, et cetera. As it's worded at the moment, that definition may not be wide enough to even cover Transnet port terminals, which of course is a terminal operator and only marginally transports cargo. And we assume that the intention is very much that monopoly, the Transnet port terminals container business, falls within the ambit of this bill. And that is our submission from SOSOA, and we're happy to take any questions in relation to the submission. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Norton. And I hear that Peter was also listening. We did get an indication that he was still busy somewhere. And we appreciate that he made time to listen to you presenting as we were listening to you. Thank you very much. The first caller on the line, or the first question you'll get, is from Honorable Mangu. He'll be followed by Honorable Hansinger, Honorable Lawrence McDonald, in that order, please.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much to the presenter. Well, my comments will be consistent with the previous presentation, and my colleague, Honorable Hunsinger, with the previous, because it's always difficult to follow you and take notes when maybe we as a committee should also take some blame. Maybe we should insist on presenters preparing a slide presentation where they are able to. We must also accept that there might be people who don't have the resources or the know-how and so forth. Be it as it may, it just makes it a little bit challenging to follow the presentation when it's purely on the narrative written there. However, I would like to understand from you, Mr. Norton, as to what is your view of your association as it relates to transformation. Transformation, what is your view? And depending what your answer is, the follow-up to that or link to that will be, do you think that this bill could assist in transforming the industry, or should be used to transform the industry that it seeks to achieve? Number two, you said that Section 4.1 is not very clear, and you tried to make an understanding of what you think it is and so forth. I would appreciate, although you are tempted in your submission, but it's not clear what your proposal is, given your understanding of what you think Section 4.1 could be meaning. It is clear in your submission that you do not support Section 4.2, subsection 2, which is giving powers to the minister to add on a list and so forth. I would like to get an expansion as to what exactly is your concern on Section 4, subsection 2, as it relates to giving powers to the minister. It's not very clear, at least to me, in reading into your submission. Next issue would be, you seem to be, in my view, casting aspersions already on the capacity of the CEO or those around him or her who would be appointed to this regulator or to the board of this regulator. And the reason I'm saying so is that you are suggesting in your submission that there should be an industry representative assisting the CEO who will be appointed. And I don't know why at this point in time we will be already thinking that there would be a need for assistance of anybody. So that I would like you to clarify for me. It will be very, very great. Lastly, you seem to me, and this is maybe seeking clarity from you, to be suggesting that government should be more concerned about what's happening in the public sector and leave the private sector alone. That is my reading, and it is really subject to correction. And that is based exactly on your last comments. And I will leave it there, Chairperson. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Hi, Baba Ngiyabo. Ngizwile. Akunikeza omunye ngakini lapho. I-Mike Simuzwe, Baba Chris Hansinger.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Mr. Norton, for your submissions, also for taking time working through what we have on the table currently, all in an effort to assist and help us in developing a much needed piece of legislation, but then also a piece of legislation that could make meaningful difference. So thank you for your contribution. I must also add my voice to my learned colleague Mangu, who has also expressed disappointment in not getting a PowerPoint presentation, which just makes it easy to follow, especially on these virtual platforms. You might be able to imagine what our desks look like between having different submission notes and then, you know, keeping track of a bill in the middle of all of this as a general term of reference and orientation. Nevertheless, thank you for your submissions. Right at the onset, you mentioned that the logistics chain has bottlenecks, and I would like you to share a couple of those, but then particular pick those elements out where the economic regulation would then in particular benefit business. Because the state-owned enterprises in this field stand central in the strive to improve economic development and growth. So therefore, what are those bottlenecks? And how could a potential regulator help and assist to then improve the relationships between the different stakeholders? We currently have a dispensation of regulation, of tariff setting, fee setting, from the ports regulator, also from port terminals, also from Transnet Flight. And yes, being state-owned enterprises, the experience of the users are one that records manipulation of some sort. So therefore, the intention then is to have this regulator in a construct where, similar to private sector being controlled of the Competition Commission, state-owned enterprises would be controlled, but then for the stakeholders to have a remedy. But then each of these regulators, like the port regulator and Transnet terminals and Transnet, there is a tribunal currently. What is the experience in approaching the tribunal and the fears related to that experience in what might become the regulator in a not desired way? So what mechanisms can we build into the model of an economic regulation of transport different to what we currently have in tribunals and with boards? Would you also suggest and reckon that the consultative process should be part of regulation rather than to have a system where a complaint or an appeal would be the only recourse? So again, it is a question which I would like your ideas on in terms of ambit, inclusion and remit, about what one should include and exclude, and whether the consultative process, in other words, the pre-phase of tariff setting, should also be included. Your ideas on that. Chairperson, for the others, I've been covered by Honorable Mangu. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ansinga. Honorable Lawrence MacDonald.
Thank you, Chair. I also welcome the presentation made by Mr. Norton. It's good to hear that the organization for ship operators and agents are in support of the bill. But then the other shoe drops, and then they've got problems with Section 4.1 and then Section 4.2. And it's been alluded to by the previous speakers extensively on that. My only question is, currently, of all these people belonging to this organization and of ship operators and agents, what percentage of them are from the previously disadvantaged communities? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Those were the hands that were showing on my screen. For respect to our elder here, Honorable May, I should just check whether you'd want to say something.
No, thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you. Ndate Norton. Tony Norton.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Honourable Ministers, for your questions. I'm afraid I didn't get all of them down, so I'm going to deal with them as I recall them. And perhaps the first one I can deal with is transformation. The industry is committed to transformation. The National Ports Authority is a body that is able to ensure that transformation takes place in the shipping industry through its process of registration. It is the Ports Authority, and it's only through its registration of agency members that that persons can operate as agents in the ports in South Africa. And in order to do so, you have to meet your equity requirements in those businesses. There are certainly black-owned businesses in ships agency in South Africa. I'm aware of that. There are members of SOSOA that are youth and black-owned shipping businesses in South Africa. I can name one, Linson Nambi, for example. So there are mechanisms that exist in the shipping sector, principally Transnet National Ports Authority and its registration process is able to ensure that transformation does occur at the required pace. Now, I'm not too sure if that satisfies that part of the questions. The next question that I can recall, and there were a number, so please forgive me if I forget one, and if you could remind me, and I'll deal with them as you raise them again. But I think the next one was section 4.1. I said that we assumed, and by we I mean SOSOA, that what is meant by section 4.1 is that those entities that are currently regulated through the auspices of the Minister of Transport automatically continue to be regulated in terms of this new bill. That's what we assume it to be. The wording doesn't quite reflect that intention. And if that is what's intended, which we would support, frankly, then it should be changed to read subject to economic regulation by the minister through legislation, because what the Minister of Transport has done is the minister has set up the ports regulator, and the ports regulator currently regulates Transnet National Ports Authority. Just to clarify another issue that was raised, the current ports regulator does not regulate any other entity other than the Ports Authority. So it does not regulate Transnet Port Terminals. It does not regulate Transnet Freight Rail. Those parts of Transnet are unregulated at present. And that is the reason why we support the overall regulation of those monopolies, because quite clearly it's legislated that, for example, in the container sector, it's only Transnet Port Terminals that can develop container terminals in South Africa. And obviously on the rail side, it's only Transnet Freight Rail that can operate on the rail side. So for that reason, we think that extending the current regulation of the ports regulator to freight rail and terminals would be a good thing. And we think that the current ports regulator has actually done a very good job at curtailing costs through Transnet port terminals. Does that adequately answer that question? If it does, I'm happy to move on. If somebody could just remind me of the questions that I haven't managed to answer yet.
No, finish those that you have. We'll get members to respond, those who have not been answered, Mr. Tony.
Well, those are the two main ones that I can remember. Okay. The other ones have escaped me at the moment, if you don't mind. Yeah.
Okay. McD, do you have a question that has not been answered?
Chair, I'm fine. I'm covered. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Honorable Ansinger?
Okay, for now. Thank you, Chair.
Sorry, I do remember one other, and that was a reference to us casting aspersions on the regulator that hasn't yet been appointed yet. We don't mean to cast aspersions on the regulator at all, and sorry if it came across in the submissions that we were doing so. All we mean to convey is that all of these sectors have their own unique way of structuring themselves, which are quite complex. The sector that I'm most familiar with is the shipping sector. And in the shipping sector, you have agreements such as vessel sharing arrangements, bareboat charter parties, time charter parties, voyage charter parties, bills of lading, way bills. These are all complex. These are all understood by people that operate in the shipping industry, but for people outside of the industry, are quite difficult to get to grips with and to properly understand unless you're able to tap into somebody with knowledge of the industry and how it operates. And I'm not suggesting that shipping is somehow unique in this respect at all. I'm sure it's not. I'm sure if you had to, if a person that was involved in the shipping industry suddenly had to walk into a pharmaceutical factory, they would be equally out of place with how the pharmaceutical industry arranges itself. So we say is that because of these ways in which different industries structure themselves and the unique terminology that is often used to describe different structures, we believe it's very helpful for the regulator to have somebody on staff that is able to easily provide details of how the industry usually operates in a particular case.
Thank you, Mr. Norton. Baba Manu.
Thank you very much. My question specifically on whether they support why they do not support section 4.2, which gives the minister certain powers. It's explicit in your submission. I wanted to know what is the reasoning thereof. Thank you, Chair. That is thank one you. Question missed on my side.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry about that, yes. So the reason for that is simply that we believe that the Competition Commission at the moment deals with what is raised in section 4.2 other than in respect of state sanctioned monopolies. So in other words, it's difficult for the Competition Commission to deal with the behavior of an organization that is sanctioned by legislation to be a monopoly. It's easy for the Competition Commission to deal with a private body that becomes a monopoly, because the one falls easily within the remit of the Competition Commission and can be dealt with adequately, whereas we believe that pricing and other issues where a monopoly is established by state legislation is very difficult for the Competition Commission to deal with. So it's only at that level. But having said that, we see advantages as well to this regulator dealing with private monopolies as well. And the advantage would be that to the extent that this regulator develops expertise in the transport sectors, and I say sectors because you've got a number of different industries that are dealt with in transport, not just one. You've got shipping, rail, you've got terminal handling, you've got air. All of these industries have different ways of structuring themselves and you require different expertise. And so to the extent that this regulator develops expertise in all of those transport sectors, we believe that it does add value in dealing with, so that section 4.2 could be actually a benefit to the country as a whole.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Norton. Your knowledge of the sector where you are has actually helped us to understand your submission. We also want to appreciate the fact that when we requested you to come a little bit earlier than your scheduled time, you understood. Say to your organization, we appreciate the fact that you took time to be with us in shaping this bill. And we appreciate the fact that right from the onset, you have already raised your support for the bill. We will request you as we move along with this bill to just keep track. And if there's anything that you further want to deposit as an idea, we will be ready for that occasion. Otherwise, thank you. Thank you for taking time to be with us. It's always a pleasure to work with people like you, the members of the public outside there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much indeed, and to the committee. Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you. Have a beautiful weekend.
Thank you. You too.
And if you're using your ship, be careful of the waves. Thank you.
We will try.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Honorable members, I think this brings us to the end of our business today. Am I correct, Valerie?
Yes, Chair, that was the last submission.
That was the last submission. I'm happy that we could deal with these submissions when we are still all here. Some members had raised some commitment after one, and I'm sure this will serve everybody well. Friday Nohal. I just want to remind members that the 13th, the 14th, the 27th, and the 28th are the dates that this portfolio committee requested that we should all be together and playing oversight. As a chair, I marched with the collective. I'm just reminding the collective not to put apologies on that particular day because the oomph and the zeal that we requested these days meant we were forward-looking to be granted, and they are now granted. We are looking forward to be in Mangaung with all of you, and the following week, the Capetonians must be in Gauteng, including the Free Staters and the Mpumalangas. Otherwise, let me thank you how we have been handling these submissions by different people, and I really want to say I'm humbled by the extent to which members to give themselves time to read, because that helps to enhance the outlook of the committee in the public space. With those few words, let me say to you, long live all of you, honorable members. Do take care of yourself. COVID is still with us. Until we meet next week, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Nice week.
Sihlalo namalungu makobokazana kalala endleleni yazini kunyembelekile. Sithi mazene thole.
Mangethe.
Mazena thole.
Washo manje mangethe onsundu. Igazi ligijima kwathi angigiye ngishaye zakithi zakwazi kode unsele ntuna abazi umuntu bangenye indaba awu
sengiyabonaitlalo zwane ndikrelekrele ngokwane leyo namhlanje usala kakhule
wow
watch it
You see, this
have a wonderful weekend, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Bye.